Kudos again to Jay Sokol for being able to name five of the six Girl Scout cookies.
I'm still impressed.
That and he did the jumble as soon as he walked in, so that was pretty impressive.
Yeah. Back like the good old days. I mentioned Whisk Broom. He starts doing the jumble.
Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm. 8:37, Steve Ogden joins us this morning. How are you today?
I'm fine. I can't do what Jay Sokol can do.
Well, you know what? He probably has a different skill set than you, and you have a different one than he does, and that probably works out well for all of us. Steve Ogden is the...
Good morning. Good morning.
You're back in Bryan College Station, are you?
I am. Yesterday I flew out to El Paso and back and got back in town about 10 o'clock last night. And, I'd like to talk about that a little bit because...
Sure.
One of the things that the legislature is committed to focusing on is border security, and it's really, really bad in northern Mexico. In fact, I was in El Paso yesterday, and they were telling me that more people were killed and murdered in Juarez, Mexico last year than all the people that were killed and murdered in Afghanistan. And they're averaging... over 10 murders a day just in Juarez.
Wow.
It's terrible. And there's a lot of nuance along the border because El Paso is relatively safe. In fact, it's a pretty safe city compared to other Texas cities in statistics. The people down there are really, really concerned about the message going out that it's so dangerous along the border that nobody will come to El Paso. So... one of the things we were wrestling with yesterday is the Chamber of Commerce argument versus border security is zero-sum game or not. I don't think it is. I think if we can improve border security, I think it'll ultimately reduce violence in northern Mexico. And if it reduces violence in northern Mexico, that should be good for the economies of northern Mexico and El Paso. But that's a big concern out there that... we paint such a negative picture about what's going on in northern Mexico that nobody will go to southern Texas.
Well, and the thing is, we are such a diverse economy. You and I were talking off the air. That's a different time zone even. They are literally in a different time zone than the rest of the state. And, you know, I can remember 3 years ago, they were saying El Paso was going to be one of the booming cities in America because of all the input of military there. They were combining bases, and there were going to be a lot of people moving in.
It is. I mean... El Paso is in a different time zone, and my wife says, El Paso's pretty far. I said, yeah, I think Omaha, Nebraska is closer to Bryan than El Paso. But it is booming, and Fort Bliss out there is ramping up. It's kind of interesting that the United States Army is going to put 40,000 troops and all their families and dependents at Fort Bliss because it looks a lot like Iraq and Afghanistan out there. So it's really it is growing. The economy is pretty healthy there, but there's a great deal of fear that the economic ties that El Paso has with Juarez and northern Mexico are really threatened by this border security argument. So their tendency really is to try to downplay it, but I disagree. I don't think you can. And the other thing I wanted to say is I was on the Bridge of Americas. There's five bridges between El Paso and Juarez, but the only bridge that's free, doesn't have a toll on it, is called the Bridge of Americas. And I was standing on that bridge yesterday talking to the U.S. custom officials and immigration officials and state officials and what have you, and they pointed out to me something that I've been talking about for a couple of months. They said, you know, we're really good about figuring who's coming into this country, and they've got the latest and greatest electronics, and they got license plate readers, and they got card readers, and they even got Geiger counters there to see if anybody's trying to smuggle in uranium. And he says, I really know who's coming across this border going north. But said, look at the southbound lane. I have no idea who's going out of the United States south. And said, and basically said, can the state of Texas help us by putting in some sophisticated electronic equipment so we can get as much information about people leaving the country as are coming in? And I think we can. And I'm going to be talking to Bill Flores about this, and I'm going to talk to Congressman McCall. I think this is something we can fix.
Well, of course, I think most every Texan believes the federal government hasn't done enough, and partnership obviously gets a lot of things done no matter what the issue. But, yeah, if it's guns and money and bad guys that are in those cars no matter what, we need to know about it. Let's talk a minute. Before we go to the budget, the governor decided that voter ID was important, and he said that. And I don't know if he changed the course of where the Senate was going or what the agenda was or timeline, but now we have a governor who wants to interject what he believes is important. How does that, after your years in the House and the Senate, how is the view of the governorship with this longest-serving governor changing things?
Well, I think it's obviously changing things because Governor Perry has never been more popular. It's been interesting. I think he's at the height of his political popularity, and if you translate political popularity into political power, I mean, he's at the pinnacle of where he's ever been. And if you go read history, it's almost kind of like it's almost Jacksonian, where the people, and in this particular case, in Andrew Jackson's day, you know, the common guy said, you know, we're tired of the elites out of Washington, D.C. running our lives, and we're going up there and taking over. Well, you see kind of that similar theme going on in Texas, and I think Governor Perry's ahead of that. But specifically in the legislature, the Senate went ahead and introduced our bill last Monday, and we're going to begin hearings Monday on that budget. Not kind of in response to your question, because we do agree that the most important thing is the budget, and we've decided to hurry up. And at the same time, we've got time to deal with the issues that Governor Perry wants us to look at.
Bob Garrett, writing in the Dallas Morning News, I'm going to read this to you because it's an article about you. Texas must overhaul current laws on Medicaid and public schools to slash spending on health and education and avoid broad tax increases, according to you. The state also must...
You know what? I'm going to get an English teacher to diagram that sentence. It's kind of a run-on sentence, don't you think?
Yeah, there you go. I kind of was thinking your comment might be on something else. But it says the Senate, the state also must cut certain medical services now enjoyed by poor adults and hope for more help from D.C. to eliminate a funding gap that is $6 billion. So, I mean, that's not a very nice way to start the article.
Yeah, and I think he may not be trying to do that, but you can't draw a conclusion yet. Here are the facts. If we do not change current law and current practice in Medicaid, we are about $6 billion short of what it's actually going to cost in the base bill. If we don't change current law and current practice with public school finance, we're about $9 billion short of what current law would expect us to spend, so we're going to have to change current law. But how we do it and exactly what combination that we're going to come up with in order to get the votes we need to pass the bill is yet to be determined. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a combination of cuts, higher spending, and possibly new revenue.
Now, one of the things that you're going to do, I guess, is there are other states obviously in the same situation. You're going to try to join forces and talk to D.C. about this?
Well, I sort of believe this to be the case. I don't know this to be a fact, but one of the issues that we have with Washington, D.C. is how they allocate the federal Medicaid funds to the states. The percentage of federal reimbursement to the states changes from state to state based on a complicated formula that I believe Texas and probably California is unfairly treated vis-a-vis New York and Vermont and Connecticut, who appear to have a much better appear that through the formulas they benefit a lot more than us. So this is not a lot different than the way the universities complain about the higher ed formulas. You know, there's only so much money, but there's also an issue about whether it's being allocated fairly. And in the case of Medicaid, I think the allocation for Texas is unfair.
Earlier this week, Dr. Lofton spoke to the Bryan College Station Economic Outlook Conference. He was the keynote speaker, and obviously he's talking about how we got a lot of students over here, but higher ed certainly has some challenges in front of them. From your view, anything new on that front that we can speak to people who work at A&M or care about what's going on over there?
Well, these are my constituents, and these are my friends and neighbors, and the reason I ran for re-election was to do my very best to protect their interest, and so that's what I'm going to do. Does that mean I can guarantee that nothing, that we're not going to have to make any cuts? No, but I'm going to do my very best to represent this district and protect our legitimate concerns.
Finally, you know, the budget that you rolled out is basically looking at not dipping into the rainy day fund. Yeah. As we start talking about whether it's health care or funding for students going to college, how do you answer those people who say, how are you going to keep the rainy day fund intact when, in fact, you're putting these cuts that some people are, say, draconian in some areas in place?
Well, let the process work. The key point that I keep trying to make is that regardless of whether you're the governor or the lieutenant governor or the chairman of finance, this is not a dictatorship. What I have to do is craft a bill that 21 senators are willing to vote for. And so the rainy day fund has to be on the table because, personally, right now, I don't think I can get 21 senators to vote for a budget that doesn't use part of the rainy day fund. But that's something that we're going to have to work on over the next 2 or 3 months. I mean, there's an infinite number of combinations of spending cuts, rainy day fund spending, sources of new revenue, and it's just going to take us 2 or 3 months to figure out what combination will get 21 votes.
You mean they haven't?
It is going to be the hardest thing I've ever done.
You mean they haven't been calling saying, "Hey, Steve, great budget. I'm right there with you."
No, it's like yesterday's fish.
It stinks, huh?
That's right.
All right, stay busy. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, see
thanks.
You.
Thanks. All right, there. That's Steve Ogden joining us from Bryan College Station right now.
Shooter Roofing is the home of the bulletproof roof. Call 1-800-FOR-ROOF. That's all you have to do. Get the best roof for your money. Save on energy, too. Schulte roofs are above all the rest. They stand up to the test. Schulte Roofing, the home of the bulletproof roof.
You know, most roofing contractors' warranties and guarantees are full of holes. Not at Schulte. They offer manufacturer-certified and drug-tested installers, 25-year transferable workmanship warranties, a 100% money-back guarantee, and if the roof ever does leak, they'll fix the leak, repair any interior damage, and pay you $250. No holes in their warranty or guarantees. They're bulletproof.
Schulte Roofing, the home of the bulletproof.
Hey, News Talk 1620 WTAW is about 9 minutes till. Okay, this is an unscientific survey, but you're the only two people who I'm talking to right now. How effective...
And we're not scientific.
No. How effective is television for using to advertise a movie? In other words, seeing a movie trailer on television... How do you generally respond to that?
I think it's very effective.
Yeah, I do too.
Because, and based on repetition, now, of course, in our cynical world, we say the more often we see it, the more they know the movie stinks, and therefore they're banking on that first weekend.
Because I happened to go to see a movie last week.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, the trailers...
We're all very impressed.
Yeah, the trailer had, you know, a couple of pretty good movies, I thought, in there. And I thought, well, I kind of might want to see that. And the reason
a couple of good lines, you mean?
Well, like,
yeah.
Well, I mean, you know,
said
like,
the trailer had a couple of good movies. Okay.
Oh, there was a trailer. Yeah, there were a couple of good trailers.
Right. Good.
Right.
Okay.
Thing to say.
Yeah.
So it made me wonder. So here, because we got a list. Hollywood Reporter has found a list of films that would be promoted during the Super Bowl. So obviously, they feel like there's some reason for that. Okay, it's Super 8. I don't know anything about that. Transformers: Dark of the Moon. Thor, I guess that's the superhero. Captain America, the first Avenger. Pirates of the Caribbean, we need to pay Johnny Depp more. Cowboys and Aliens. Limitless, Just Go With It. Battle Los Angeles. Priest, The Eagle. Rango, I don't know what that is. Kung Fu Panda 2. And Take Me Home Tonight. So, I mean, that's what? 10, 11 movies that they they are going to have within the Super Bowl. So that's why I just wonder. Obviously, seeing it on the big screen with the sound and those sorts of things helps a lot. And I know there aren't a lot of people who are watching 9-inch televisions anymore, but especially during the Super Bowl. But
I think we learned everybody's going to get a new one in time for
Super Bowl. I just wondered if that's if that'd be very effective. Here's some music. It's Name That Tune time. Who's singing? See if you can tell me.
Just outside these prison bars, the hanging tree is waiting.
You know who that is?
Sunrise on me.
No, because we're not KORA.
No, that's it. It's a Charlie Louvin.
Oh, that would have been my 17,000th guess.
Charlie Louvin.
Not the Charlie Louvin. Yeah.
Who is? That's why
I was in Tom's studio just now. He and I were talking. I was like, man, have you heard that new Charlie Louvin album? He said no, because there hasn't been one in 40 years.
Charlie Louvin died on Wednesday, okay?
Oh, now we feel like crap.
You just sound like you do. You really don't.
How old was Charlie? Please tell me he won like 34.
Sounding like that, even.
How old was Charlie?
Charlie was part of the Louvin brothers. Charlie and I were
the Louvin brothers. Wow.
Right, is he the last brother with us?
I'm just telling you, okay?
Uh-huh.
You ask the Everly brothers their biggest influence, and they'll say it was the Louvin brothers.
Oh.
And in turn, you ask John Lennon. Well, he's dead. You can't ask him.
Yeah.
Who is
Paul McCartney? But they said that from a harmony standpoint, the Everly Brothers were there. So thus, Charlie Louvin channeling the Beatles
started it all.
Yeah, something like that.
That was a quantum leap of a mini bit, you know. Can we talk about
3 degrees of separation?
Yeah. Can we talk about knockers some more?
All right, here we go. A woman in Argentina fell 23 stories, landed on a parked car, and survived.
Good grief.
That is a 330-foot fall. Excuse me, jump. It says after jumping from her hotel room, landed on a taxi, crushing the car's roof, shattering the windshield. Unidentified 30-something woman rushed to a hospital. She has survived, though. Man. And a 76-year-old British man and his wife crashed into a church in Germany because the GPS told them to.
At least they didn't drive into a pond.
Metro says the couple ended up in the hospital with minor injuries. According to the pair of seniors, the navigation system told them to turn right, even though there wasn't a road. They did. Come on! There's not a road! Don't be turning. Story in the Houston Chronicle. I'm going to have to come over here and get it.
That's okay. We'll wait for you here.
I'm back.
As long as you're back in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
I ain't waiting for you after that.
On the City-State edition, they are having a geezer fest in Houston.
Ooh, sounds pleasant.
A geezer fest. It is the...
That's a hocking and moaning and groaning at that thing.
Third annual...
Nodding off.
Yeah, people getting there late.
Yeah. Lunch at 10. Yeah. Got to dismiss by 3.
I know.
Allowing for traffic. Get them home before 5.
Got to have space for walker storage. And
how many left blinkers are going to be left on in that parking lot?
We could go on and on.
I just let you.
That's
right. Every minute you talk's a minute I don't have to. It's the third annual Geezer Fest. It is hosted by a company called Venture Tech, a Houston oil field equipment business that makes a point of hiring ex-convicts, recovering substance abusers, old-timers, and folks.
Grumpy old men.
That's right.
The geezer. I remember in the old days.
Yeah.
The about, geezer. 20 years, I'll be asking them for a job.
Yeah.
The geezer sloths will be singing.
Yeah, there you go. Right. Failure to signal a turn on his bicycle got a Dayton, Ohio man more than just a traffic citation. The police officer spotted the man riding a bike with no lights or bell. You got to have a Bell in Dayton?
Welcome
to Dayton, home of the gayest bicycles in Ohio.
You have to have streamers on the handlebars?
I think there's other places you got to have a Bell.
All right.
Yeah. You got to let them know you're coming, because you know in that heavy traffic, you can hear that little tling, tling.
Yep.
Yeah.
Officers.
Yeah, but you can't hear a Prius.
The officer stopped the man for not properly signaling a turn. Oh, come on.
Aren't you supposed to keep both hands on the bike?
Yeah.
On the handlebar?
Nope. You go straight out if you're going left. You go straight down if you're going right. And you go straight up if you're going to stop.
Yeah, while performing a pat-down for safety, the officer discovered the man was wearing 3 jackets and 4 pair of pants.
I bet I know what's going
inside
on.
Inside the pocket of the innermost pair of pants, the officer found 2 objects.
Go on.
please, fast. Yeah.
The man told...
How the whole show just fell apart.
I know.
No, it didn't.
This one at the Christmas party.
I was taking a breath. You guys ran with it.
You're badly timed, Brad.
Yeah. Could you have taken a worse breath opportunity?
The man told the officer, that's weed. And then he said, I smoke weed.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, he was carrying a scale and merchandise with him. Okay, on that, what a way to end the week.
God.
Yeah, okay.
Not signaling kind of seems small potatoes. Huh?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? All right, on this date in history.
I love this
part. Yeah, I know you do. I can't find the document. Doesn't matter. You got a lot of stuff, don't you?
Well, this date in history, 25 years ago,
sure,
challenge.
Obviously,
that's one of those, where were you, you know?
Yeah.
I was sick with the flu in bed, and I remember.
Sound about like now.
I didn't feel like I did. Yeah. I felt horrible.
Okay,
but,
the Lego Company patented that block design in 1958 on this date, and gosh golly, We Are the World was recorded.
Oh, really?
1985.
Golly, I try to watch that every day.
You have 1 minute.
Oh, yeah. If you listen to the judges on American Idol, 15-year-old Lauren Elena has already made it to the Idol finals. She was the last audition in Nashville and blew the judges away. She even did an impromptu duet with Steven Tyler. And a former Team USA, Stormy Henley, also made it to Hollywood. Their next stop for the Idol auditions is going to be Austin, Texas. So get on down there. New at the movie theaters this weekend, The Mechanic. This is with Jason Statham and Ben Foster. It gets a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. The Right. This is the newest thing from Sir Anthony Hopkins. But the Rotten Tomatoes doesn't like it. It only gets a 16% from Rotten Tomatoes.